Welcome back to ESPN Daily's special 20th anniversary series about Pardon the Interruption, the very strange sports television show that kind of changed everything. In our first two episodes, which you can find earlier in this feed, we tracked how Tony and Mike went from newspaper guys at the Washington Post, where they once looked down on all TV people as, quote, pretty boy poodles, to ESPN, where they put on makeup and almost immediately started winning Best in Show. Now, to be clear, Tony and Mike did not expect PTI to be some blue ribbon, industry-changing program when they started it. So I wanted to know, when did it start to feel like this whole thing was working?
When I heard people talking about watching it, maybe sometimes players that are now ex-players, and they said, dude, I'm watching the show.
Probably early on when they told us how many people were watching, and it was many more people than they told us they'd be happy with watching, and everybody was suddenly saying, I like this show. Even the people at the Post were saying, we like this show. And so, you know, we probably looked at each other at one point and said, well, in for a dime, in for a dollar. We might as well keep doing this for a while.
But remember here, Tony and Mike were infamous for waging these office-wide battle royale arguments that could consume entire newsrooms. So it also seemed important from the beginning for the co-hosts to actually host people. They both wanted visitors. They wanted house guests.
It's important to have outside voices because it's important to have outside voices in everything. In your family life, it's important to have outside voices. That's why people have consultants. That's why they have people they argue with. That's why they have people they call in and say, take a look at this for me. What do you think? That's why they're editors, outside voices. Just to have something incestuous is dangerous. It's awful. It's not credible. And I don't want to watch it.
But while Tony and Mike could argue forever, the ethos of PTI was also this transparent economy of time. This was designed to be a 30-minute show with a clock and a rundown where you hit topics for like 90 seconds before a literal bell would ring. So Eric Rideholm, the executive producer, he also designed a clear time limit for any and all guests. 5 good minutes.
For 5 good minutes, Tony, what makes a good guest in your mind?
2 things. Smart and funny. We forgive everything for smart and funny. It's entertainment.
And the first guest they invited in back in October 2001, that was an obvious call.
I said to Charles, if we're going to do this, we need you to be the first guest. And Charles said, all right, I'll do that. We're like, that's it? We did that easy? And you can look and, as they say, check the tape. And Charles Wade Barkley was our first guest, and I'm told our most frequent guest. Welcome back to Pardon the Interruption. We're going to spend 5 good minutes right now with somebody we thought we'd be covering playing basketball instead of listening to him broadcast basketball games. Charles Barkley is going to join us live from Atlanta. Charles, thanks for being with us.
No problem, Mike. Thank you for having me.
Charles, let me just ask one thing. Is Barkley aware how much he looks like you? When they flash you both on the screen, it is unbelievable. Somebody separated at birth.
Let me tell you something. If you're telling me I look like Will Bond, I just got a really bad opinion of myself, but I think I'm good looking.
Well, Charles, thank you. We're going to still miss you playing, but we're glad we get to see you several nights a week on Turner Sports Broadcasting Games. Charles Barkley, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Charles.
All right, you guys. Hey, good luck with the show.
Thank you. We'll need it.
Yeah.
Charles knew, even before Tony and Mike did, that this weird show was gonna get attention and ratings and all of this success. But the biggest thing about it was that it didn't feel artificial.
Him and Tony, to do a show with your best friend, a white guy and a black guy who live different worlds,
yeah. And
who, like, it's like a man and a woman gonna have a different opinion on the subject. But to have 2 guys who've been in the business for X amount of years, like, I trust them on television.
Those people were people in our lives. That's how we asked them, as favors. Can you come on, you know, they were people in our lives that we had covered.
And those people who were drawn from every sport, they started telling Mike and Tony all sorts of stuff. For instance, there was that Cy Young winner in 2017 who suddenly had less than an hour to try and figure out his life.
Justin Verlander has been mowing teams down since joining the Astros at the beginning of the month, and we are pleased to welcome him back to the program. We're going to start with this. The Tigers GM asked you whether you would go to Houston 40 minutes before the deadline, and you were quoted as saying, "Let me think about it." So you got 40 minutes. Can you recreate your thought process in those 40 minutes, understanding that this is a enormous departure in your life?
I get the phone call from Al, and my heart just kind of dropped, and I knew what it was about. And, he said, "You got a decision to make." And literally it just came down to a moment where I'm kind of like pacing back and forth, and I'm telling myself, like, "Trust your instincts, trust your instincts." And then I pause. I'm like, "Whoa, what are your instincts saying? I have no idea like what I'm supposed to do."
And then there was the future WNBA Hall of Famer who opened up in 2009 and let the show into her household.
WNBA star Candace Parker is a few weeks into motherhood and perhaps a few weeks away from rejoining the league. We welcome her to the program, resplendent in her Tennessee orange. We've read that you're planning to return later this month. What do you think that transition will be like?
You know, I think it's going to be a tough transition. You know, I'm the type of person that needs a good 10 hours of sleep every night.
That's over.
Takes naps before games and, you know, has a schedule. And, you know, obviously I've learned in the past 3 weeks that, you know, it's not about me anymore.
But as family is concerned, it's hard not to think of another interview the show did with a different MVP. This one happened in February of 2003.
We're going to spend the next 5 good minutes with Michael Wilbon, who's down in Atlanta for the NBA All-Star festivities, wearing the same sweatsuit he wears on location everywhere. And I see he's got somebody famous next to him. So go ahead, Wilbon, take it away.
Yeah, Tony, I know how you don't want to talk to me on these things when I'm on location. So I decided to get a real live All-Star to do the real good 5 minutes. And it's Kobe Bryant, of course, a Western Conference All-Star. And I'm going to start the questions right here in Atlanta. Kobe, it seems fatherhood agrees with you. In the 5 games since you and your wife had your baby daughter, 201 points, 5 straight victories. Utah.
This new baby Mike is referring to is Natalia Bryant. She's the oldest of Kobe's 4 daughters.
Well, you know what? Having a daughter puts everything in perspective. You know, you're going to have somebody that's going to love you alongside of my wife that's going to love me whether I score 40 points or I score 0 points. You know, that love's going to be there regardless.
Of course, the other way that Mike loved to put Kobe in perspective invariably involved another player.
Michael Jordan and his last All-Star game. That's what most of the guys were talking about. I know you had delays getting in from New York today and couldn't participate in that. But how do you feel about this being Michael's last game? And do you see this as a game that most people are going to defer to him?
Yeah, I mean, and they should. He's done so much for our league. So I think it's only fitting for him to go out in style and go out the right way, as Michael Jordan should.
Michael Jordan was a Washington Wizard at this point. And so it's important to remind you that Wilbon, who is, yes, from Chicago, worked in D.C., which meant that he got to cover and know Jordan over years and years and years, as well as anyone in sports media, to the point where Tony would mercilessly make fun of him for it. And Kobe knew it.
Kobe would come over, you know, when the media lines up, particularly at Staples Center after a game, you're in that little line outside the locker room. And Kobe, on a few occasions, would just walk over and I get an elbow in the ribs. And he would say something to the effect of, and it's really close to this, if not exact. "So would the old man have had 42 and 7 against Vince Carter tonight? Think he'd have gotten that? Huh?" You know, and this went on for years. This went on when Michael was certainly an executive with the Wizards. And I loved it. It was just, it showed, you know, and if people think that Kobe Bryant didn't idolize Michael Jordan, they are idiots. If they thought part of that was phony or trumped up or just dramatic, you know, posthumously, it wasn't, because I got to see it. And I got to see it in real life time. And it was fun.
And then came January 26th. 2020. It was a Sunday, so Tony and Mike were not working, but they heard the news in the exact same place at the exact same time.
Well, you know, I remember where we were. We were together. We were at Seminole Golf Club, famous golf club in Florida. And we played and we walked into the locker room. We had a meal. We walked in to change clothes, to change our shoes. And the the caddy master said, I think you guys better come in this room. And he pulled us in a private room where we saw the first images on CNN.
Good evening. Welcome to ESPN SportsCenter. Zubin Mehenti. I'm Michael Lees. Breaking news in this Sunday afternoon. Five-time NBA champion, former league MVP Kobe Bryant died earlier this afternoon in Los Angeles in a helicopter crash. News reports are just coming in among multiple victims. Kobe Bryant on that helicopter.
And I had to go out to California. I left Super Bowl week and went out to California. It's just, you know, it's one of the awful experiences of all of our lives. And in my case, I had a photo on my phone that had come from a few years earlier, Kobe's last visit to Washington to play the Wizards. He's working and dribbling and shooting, and he saw my son, and he said, he mouthed the words, you know, just sort of just nodded, like, he said, is that your son? I said, yeah. And he just made a beeline over and shook his hand, which the official NBA photographer, and I'm drawing a blank on his name now, which is awful, he got that picture. And I have that picture forever more.
Coming up, the story that might be the best thing ever told in the history of PTI.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
The PTI vault is one hell of a thing to try and excavate. Just ask our staff. It's kind of like if an unrepentant hoarder was also a massive, unhinged sports fan. It's teeming with 5,000 shows, more than that even. Even more corrections by now. And not to mention many Uranus jokes. It's like a filing cabinet full of interview tapes that are frozen in time. And a lot of them feature this guy.
I'm Steve Young. I'm an NFL analyst for ESPN.
Pro Football Hall of Famer Steve Young has appeared on PTI 82 times.
Michael always asks great questions. He was always fair. He can be critical and he can be fit, but he's fair. And I think you get a sense that he tries to see the athletes in, like, there's more of a, it's a human experience. Like, it's interaction. It's like an ongoing conversation. Tony is a guy that, you know, for all the cynicism and all of the critical thinking, I think that he also has a passion and a love for sports in general and an appreciation for how hard it is. And with that comes a critical eye for, I want to look it straight in the eye and I'll take every inch of it, but I don't want any fluff.
If you're just joining us, Wilbon is down in Houston for Super Bowl week, and he's joined now by Steve Young, who once threw six touchdown passes in a Super Bowl that I actually watched. Do you buy these comparisons between Tom Brady and Joe Montana, Steve?
Well, of course you do physically because, you know, Joe is tall and thin, Tom's tall and thin, they drop the same, they throw a nice ball, very accurate, they're very calm under pressure. There's a lot of reasons why they say that. I think it's a fair comparison in those kind of things, but until he wins all the Super Bowls and plays 15 years and does those all things, but it's just...
They're both personally vulnerable enough to not have to be right all the time. You know, I have an opinion, I'm going to be honest with you, and I think that comes through.
By now, it seems almost impossible for Tony and Mike to process sports history, the thing they both love the most, through anything other than the lens of PTI. Before, they were newspaper columnists. They were cramming into locker rooms and elbowing radio slugs, as Tony called them, and flying from D.C. to Vegas to cover giant fights. But once the TV show took off, their past and present would actually converge. Those fighters they used to fly off to interview and write about, often critically, now they could come to them.
The most charismatic athlete I ever could not take my eyes off Mike Tyson. Nobody could. Nobody dared to take their eyes off Mike Tyson in the ring. Never saw anything like that. Never.
Mike Tyson told, you know, the funniest story in the history of PTI.
It was June 2012, and Tyson had been preparing diligently to perform his one-man show on Broadway. Tony, and specifically Mike, remember it so vividly. I
can't spoil the story. The story has to be told by Mike Tyson, as only Mike Tyson can tell it.
All right, fine. Just roll the tape.
Can you give us about 30 seconds or a minute on what you will do on stage, if you can recall any of the part that you play?
During my divorce with Robin Givens, you know, while we were on television calling each other scoundrels, I'm still going back to our house one particular day before I go to my my lawyer to say how horrible this person is and stuff. I say maybe I give it another try. So I'm getting ready to go over there, knocking on the door. No one shows up, so I'm heading back to my car to go to my lawyer to say this is really a dreadful woman now, right? But as I'm going to my car, I see her car coming up. The reason why I know it's her car because I bought it, right? So as she comes forward and they come in the car, and you wouldn't believe who's in the car with her. Hello?
I'm scared to guess who?
It's Brad Pitt.
Right?
So you have to understand this. At the moment, see, people don't like me to tell this, but at the moment, you know, I'm starting. I'm like a stallion with a, you know, man, I'm ready to roll. But when I see him, I'm a wet noodle. So after that, if I didn't even think about slugging him or killing him, man, all the fight was knocked out of me after seeing that.
That's it. That was great.
Mike,
that's
great. It's been too long. Thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much.
And good luck on Broadway. I got to see this.
Power to the people, y'all. Black Panther's not gone.
You know, upon further reflection, definitely a lot better for everybody that we let Mike Tyson tell that story himself. But after the break, we take a hard turn from the baddest man on the planet to the most powerful man in the world.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So, working as a newspaper sports writer, it meant that you worked in journalism's toy department. That's what Kornheiser always likes to say. You obsessed over what often seemed to the serious political journalists, like arcane, meaningless facts. And not even facts, actually, like factoids, jock ephemera. But PTI, it turned out, was change that you could believe it. Because the people that the serious political journalists obsessed over, they were actually sort of obsessed with Tony and Mike.
At least one president of the United States told us that he really loved the show. That is true. But let's look at the presidents of the United States in that period of time before the show and during the show. So you have Bill Clinton. He's a sports fan. You have George W. Bush. He's a sports fan. He owned the Texas Rangers at one point. You got Barack Obama. He's a sports fan. Okay, that is the currency among all of them. They're smart. they're competent, they have vision, and they are sports fans. What are they going to watch? Okay? Are they going to watch Fox News and MSNBC and CNN to have people talk about what they've done? Are they going to listen to people say what happened in the room? They know what happened in the room because they're in the room. It's their room. So of course they're going to watch sports. Of course they are, because they don't need that. And that's how it was explained to me by a number of people who've sat in that office.
Mike, on the other hand, prefers to move through the halls of power almost like an NBA scout.
I had met President Obama previously several times, Chicago stuff. Book with Charles. We sat for an hour one day. We were supposed to get 10 minutes with Senator Obama. Actually, he was running for the Senate. We were supposed to get like 10 minutes. He gave us like an hour and a half. I remember standing at a car. It was a Toyota Highlander SUV that I had rented to drive us around. I wasn't back here living here yet then. And this is like 2002 or something, 2003. And I looked at Charles. And I just didn't want to say what I was thinking. It was raining. And we were coming out of his office right down on South Michigan Avenue. And Charles looked at me across the top of the car and he said, "Hey, boy, I sincerely believe he's going to be president one day." And I didn't have the guts to say it. Charles did. And I remember thinking, yeah, that's right.
That is why, in the shadow of the old state capitol, where Lincoln once called on a house divided to stand together, where common hopes and common dreams still live, I stand before you today to announce my candidacy for president of the United States of America.
Yeah, a better pick in any event than the time Tony and Mike drafted Darko and Carmelo, respectively, over LeBron.
It is now 11 o'clock on the East Coast, and Keith, we can report history.
Barack Obama is projected to be the next president of the United States of America.
In Chicago, let's listen in for a moment.
That's the reaction out in Times Square. ABC News ready to project. Barack Obama will be the next president of the United States.
Senator Barack Obama, much like intern Mike Wilbon many, many moons before, moved from Chicago to Washington, D.C. for this new full-time job, all of which culminated in one notable day in 2013 when Tony and Mike got the call.
Oh, I told this story before. We got a call that we could have lunch with some fans of the show at the Navy mess hall in the White House. We put on our nice clothes and we're like, sure, we'll have lunch.
Right, we forgot to tell you that this whole moment was actually brought to you by none other than Statboy himself, Anthony Joseph Paul Reale.
Reale brought Wilbon and me along to what is called the White House mess. It was lunch. It was lunch in the White House.
We don't know what's going to come of this. We go in through the front gate of the White House, Kornheiser, Wilbon, and myself, and we get into the cafeteria area of the White House. And we're ordering off this beautiful menu. It's the West Wing burger, and it's the White House crab cake. And we're meeting with some, very high-level staff in the White House. And all the phones start buzzing at the same time. We're like, oh, my goodness, what is this? Oh, is there something serious going on? Are we at DEFCON 1 here?
And as we order dessert, someone comes over and says, you got some time? The boss would like to see you. Look, what? Huh? What? There can only be one boss. They take us up. I think we go upstairs at some point, and we're ushered into a room, and President Obama's there.
And then we hear, where are my sports guys? Look, come in here. It's important to be clear here. You can shake my hand, whatever. That was a terrible Obama reality.
It was.
And it's President Barack Obama. He's invited us to the White House. And it was a little bit of a surprise for all of us, but now we're in it. and we're shaking hands with them, and they're talking golf, and we're talking about LeBron, and we're talking sports. We're talking about the Bulls. We're talking about the Bears. Wilbon is going all in on Chicago. Kornheiser's killing Wilbon to the president. It's an amazing moment. I'm there just happy to be part of it, nodding along, you know, for the first time in my life, somebody muted me.
I think he always watched it. I think once he may have referred, and it's Wilbon's word, he may have referred to us as knuckleheads. I mean, you're not going to pull that word out of thin air if you haven't watched the show.
Yes, Barack Obama really does watch the show, but I'm also pretty certain that he genuinely just thinks that they are knuckleheads. More on that later.
You know, we get out of there. We had five minutes with the president, and, you know, there was discussions about maybe playing golf in the future. And we get out, and, you know, we're on a high after being in that room.
And very shortly thereafter, he says, "So when are we playing golf?" And I believe I say, "I got Saturday free. How about you?" And he says, "Done." And Wilbon and I are going to play. We're going to play in just a couple of days. When we walk out of there, our feet are not touching the ground. We're walking back because we've got to do a show. And it's just unbelievable.
And that's when Wilbon says, so we were really in the White House with the president. And we were in like these like little offices in these antechambers. And Corner says, yeah, we were in the little offices in the White House. I'm like, what are you guys talking about? That office? The one that was oval shaped? That was the Oval Office. That desk was the desk. The resolute desk of the... You didn't see George Washington and Abraham Lincoln looking at you? When you get in that room, you're just lost. You're totally lost. They had no idea where they were. We were in the Oval Office.
And as we're walking, Reale says, boy, that was really something. We were in the Oval Office. And Mike and I look at each other. We didn't know we were in the Oval Office. We just thought we were in a room. We were locked on to the president to such a degree that we had no concept.
All of which is maybe not the best way for the sports media to refute the condescension of those hard news reporters, I must admit. But in fairness to Tony and Mike, they did a lot more than just serve as ambassadors of the so-called toy department. They would change the entire business of sports writing and sports television for better and for worse. That's episode 4, where we look at what PTI's 20-year saga all adds up to, and what's ahead. I'll talk to you then.